My name is Oscar Ramos. I'm from Lone Star College, and this is Link Ahlander, and we're going to be presenting together on Greening the Campus from the Data Center to the Classroom. All right. So this is basically the overview of our presentation. We're going to first introduce our college and our college system, kind of explain who we are and what we do. We're going to talk about some of our active green initiatives, some of the things that we've been doing ongoing, and some of the measurements that we've been taking, kind of share those numbers with you and how we've done that. And then we're going to talk about some new initiatives, try to get some new thoughts, some topics that haven't been thought about before. And maybe at the end we can share some other initiatives that maybe you guys are doing that maybe some other people haven't really thought about yet. So hopefully this could be a good idea exchange. And then we'll take questions at the end. All right, so Lone Star College system is a relatively large college system on the north side of Houston. We have 13 current locations, and we span about 1,400 square miles. At the moment, we have five main colleges, two university centers, the second which is a piece of the former HP world headquarters that we acquired about, is it 2 years now?
Year and a half.
Year and a half now. We 1.2 million square feet of space that we have our own students attending classes there, and we also are partnered with other universities. We're also in the phase of a major building project. We have 21 buildings being built currently that should be scheduled to be completed for the fall of 2012. At the moment, we have about 90,000 students. That's credit and continuing education students. And we've averaged about 25% growth per semester over the last at least year. We have 4,800 employees, and our OTS department, which is our technology services group, is 152 employees. And that includes myself, Link, and others. All right, so this has basically been our enterprise transformation strategy. In, I guess it was February of 08. In February of 08, we had a new CIO come on board, and at that moment, his decision was to centralize our organization and brought us all together. We were five separate organizations that had loose ties. But at that point, he centralized us. We all came together, and we did from operational infrastructure and business transformation. These are a list of several major initiatives that we've taken on to create the organization that you see today. Now, the idea of green IT or green computing is not a new one, but it's one that when we sat down, when we started this transformation process, we started to dialogue and talk about what is it that we want to get out of this? What is our focus? Why are we doing it to begin with? Is it something that we feel socially we need to do? Is it a financial reason? And I think what we came to it when we had this dialogue was that we wanted it to be both. You know, if you come from it from a social perspective, there are people that will come along with you. And those people are very ardent about what they're doing. But to get everybody to come along, you need to have something else. And when we looked at it, we thought if we can show value back to our organization, if we can convince those who maybe don't care about recycling or don't care about saving energy, because those people do exist. But if you could show them that there is savings to be had, efficiencies to be gained, who wouldn't want that? So these two principles are basically what we focus our initiatives through. So when we set out to do one of these initiatives, we look at it and say, is it A, socially responsible, as higher education institution, and one that chooses to be a leader in our community, is it socially responsible? And second, is it fiscally responsible? So having said that, We're going to turn it over to Link so he can speak to you about our data centers.
All right, I'll have to do the odd part, which is stand behind a microphone on a podium. I'd prefer to walk around out in different directions. One thing I need to point out, which I'm sure every one of you face, is does it make a difference for your IT organization? Do you pay your power bills? No? We're not awake? Yeah, I know you don't. It all gets paid by your CFO, and it really doesn't mean anything. The reality is that in these initiatives that we've done, we focused on the fact of communicating to our CFO constantly. We're putting this initiative in with this forecast. This is how we're going to track it and trend it. The benefit to our organization, you know, you'd think, well, great, IT saves some money, who cares? The reality is by constantly communicating those initiatives, we've been able to secure additional funding. When it comes down to lean budgets, we have not had a cut yet. So all these initiatives that show improvements of service, reduction in costs, when it comes to the table and the budget time, we're recognized by the organization as being good stewards. So what I'm going to talk to you about is data center side. And this is my favorite topic because I just finished revamping everything. I rebuilt an infrastructure designed completely around virtualization. So first approach we use, straightforward. I have 14 data centers, two main data centers, but the others are, you know, instructional support. They provide application delivery for the classroom, so they're just as important. What we did was we established a VMware first policy in 2008. At that time, we had less than 5% of our servers were virtualized. We had no enterprise-wide strategy. So when we entered into this, we said, we're going to a VM first policy, went into a VMware ELA, so that we could leverage virtualization to reduce costs. And of course, we're reducing costs and power savings at the same time. Also, we turned around and said, we're going to do server consolidation. What application really belongs where? What do you need in these locations? And how can you manage this technology better? Provide higher availability to the customer, seamless transitions. So we focused on each one of those data centers and what their functional needs really were and decided where they're going to go. We finished off the build just recently, and I'll talk quite a bit about our new data center. We put in a new high-efficiency data center in this process in order to meet the same objectives. So on virtualization, we'll talk numbers because that always works well, and these numbers have been tracked and checked. With the VMware ELA, the small picture on the top there shows the design for flexibility and high availability, which allows our centers to transition their applications to our main core. The main core, if it fails, can go up. So we're talking high availability customer service. But the reality is that by virtualizing, these blade centers are more efficient than your traditional box server, and you're able to reduce those costs. So hardware savings alone, if I had to go forklift replace everything I had on those campuses, which the problems that we had before were basically 70% end-of-life servers on each campus and some in the main data center. So we had to fix one problem, and at the same time we approached it with virtualization and new hardware. Had I replaced all that hardware with new traditional 4U, 2U boxes, I would have spent a little over $630,000 more than I spent on the new design. So the savings came in there immediately over the traditional hardware. On the campus side, I have over 400 virtualized servers that are serving these applications, with an average cost of operation now at $1,000 each. So that is software through hardware licensing. With that projected savings per year, what I'm turning around at is $231,000 on top of the $630 I saved in capital costs. When we first gave a presentation on Green IT, it was about 2009, and we had forecasts at the time. At that time, we took the old equipment that we had in these rooms and what we had power utilization of, and for both the campuses and the centers. We redesigned the architecture and came up with what the estimates by book should be at each one of these locations. So we projected per campus server room a $48,000 power and cooling savings, and at a center about $21,000, a lot lighter equipment. Our original forecast was $70,000 savings per year. In reality, what we turned around to after measuring it and tracking it for over 12 months was $73,742 saved. And so when you're coming in saying, yes, I am tracking what's happening, I'm looking at this big monster out there that's consuming power, we're able to turn around after a year's period and show real numbers, which definitely supports you as you move forward. Part of that support came in on how we were going to approach the data center. Data centers are basically a black hole of money when it comes down to operations. You're providing tons of power capacity. Many people know that PUE calculations are probably impossible, if not the hardest things to do. You have to do them. You have to track what's happening. So I had a traditional data center, forced air-cooled data center, and we had a new one we were designing at the time. So we began the design process for a high-efficiency, high-density data center. First thing, of course, you look at is what is your cooling plan? How are you going to thermally map the data center? How is your heat flow going to come across? In the center of the screen on the bottom is a thermal imprint of what our data center looked like at our main systems office prior to some changes just in the forced air methodology. So what we did was we had a thermal map done across a set of rows to look at how is our heat distribution and cooling distribution. And then we did some minor improvements. And, I mean, these were very minor. Cost-wise was under $20,000. It was controlling the dampers, changing the way the hot air was being pulled, making sure we had the right perf tiles in front of each rack according to what their density was. Another stupid, simple one, but it wasn't being done in our data center at the time when I got it, was just covering up those empty U's. So we were controlling our airflow all of a sudden. By redirecting the heat immediately upward, we were pulling it right to the return plenum and not putting it in the room and not causing more heat problems in the room. The challenge I've had here so far, and we've been trying to track this and trend this, is what the savings of just doing minor modifications like that are in the heating and cooling. What I can say on this one was, before this, out of my two cracks, my redundant crack was constantly kicking in. Texas is a little bit of a warm place in the summer, and that should never have happened. So I did not have the redundancy I needed prior to doing those changes. We are putting an end-to-end monitoring system in this data center that we put in our new data center, so we're going to be able to compare exact data centers, forced air to liquid cool. Our new data center, it's a Tier 4 design. It is a green high density. So in high density, we're packing everything into 970 square feet. So it is extremely small by standards. That's 27 racks of equipment. The advantage I had was I had dual commercial power. I had dual generator plants already in place. This was done in our HP, our new acquired property at HP. They had built the infrastructure I needed there. But what it gives me is a 240 kW load capacity per leg, A and B, and I'm able to put in flywheel technology, 99.9% efficient UPS. So now instead of going direct through the UPS for everything, I'm going offline. I'm going bypassing all UPS operations, so I'm not constantly charging batteries. I only have about a half a rack of batteries for that 240 kW load because of the flywheel technology. So it's a totally different approach. I don't have all that lead and acid sitting in there that constantly has to be maintained and serviced. Closed-loop curling done with Rittal racks is completely sealed. Every rack, there is no way air comes in and out. So I have not only clean air, the only time air gets into that location is when a door is open. Everything is designed for complete lights-out management, so there's no reason to go in there other than to rack new equipment. On top of this, what we added was green gas, high-efficiency in-rack fire suppression. So now if you have a data center fire, you're going to lose your data center. When that gas goes off, your emergency power off goes off, you're done until that clears out. In our design, it'll kill a rack, but it won't kill the center. The rest of the center can continue to operate. By the time we got done with what we've done in the data center side, we had a setup cost and virtualization, what we put out in hardware, what we've done in the new facility, of $3.2 million. In 3 years, we have projected a ROI of $820,000. And so far, these numbers have held well through the first 2 years. So we're on track to provide that last piece. The biggest advantage is, okay, we've saved a lot of money on energy. What we have turned around is we've also provided extreme high availability. A lot of people say virtualization for this and this and this, but the reality is if you take virtualization for its power cooling savings, then you turn around and look at Site Recovery Manager and its ability to provide higher level of service than you had before. Okay, I'm going to turn it back over to Oscar, and we'll talk about advanced desktop power management. Of course, at the end, I'll be more than happy to take questions or share some more information.
All right. Before we get started on this topic, and I'm going to apologize for it up front, because from now until the end of this session, I will probably say standard or standardization God knows how many times. So I want to get that out of the room, because that is truly one of the biggest things that we have done and we've moved forward with tools, equipment, and the like. So let's start with advanced desktop power management. What we are doing currently is we're leveraging the Intel vPro technology with our Altairis technology to work with doing power management. And why do we choose vPro? Well, one, it's built in to the technology. So as we purchased it, it was there. But more importantly, was one, efficiency. Of course, we wanted to standardize on a single tool. You know, there's lots of power management tools out there, but we wanted to have a standard tool that brought efficiency. Secondly, automation. Obviously, it brings a level of automation and reduces the number of hands that have to touch it. So when you go to bed at night, so do our PCs, right? We're only turning them on and using them when they're actually needed. The general rule is 4 hours, right? So if a machine isn't going to be utilized within a 4-hour period, you should probably turn it off. So what happens is our classes end at the latest 10:30 at night. All right, and our first classes don't start up till 7 in the morning. So you have a nice stretch of time that when the PC stayed on in the old model, that's just wasted energy and it's wasted money. Okay, so centralization. We are also able to centralize our operations. The management console exists at our main location, at our system office, but we also have a local console. So locally, the campuses can look at our scheduling, can get specific about classrooms that need to be on and off. They can actually get down to that point. But with the central management, we get to the next level, patch management. From a central level, patch management can be pushed down, if need be, from a central location. Currently, it is done locally. But if there was an emergency situation, if there was something that needed to be pushed down to your systems in mass quickly, we're able to do that as well. And then also, like I said, patch management. What we do currently is we automate that process. So we set the patches to be done on some night of the week. And the systems are put down and brought up as need be. They're patched. When it's finished, they're brought back down. And then when we come in the morning, we have reports to verify what went off, what didn't, is what needs to be remediated. So in that process, it's all very low touch, and it's best that way. Like I said, you want to increase that efficiency. You don't want to have techs running from building to building, room to room, double checking, triple checking on things. That's a waste of time, energy, and resources. So what did we gain by doing this? So again, I'm going to bring up standardization. At the top, you'll see that we have what we call a traditional PC, which was basically the PCs we were buying before. We went back and we've done measurements and tests of how much it was costing on a yearly basis to maintain what we call a traditional PC. Now, our installation base currently in our system is about 12,000 systems. All right. A traditional PC was costing somewhere in the neighborhood of $81 a year to maintain. All right. So what we did was we standardized on more efficient equipment. We looked to see if there was better power supplies, more efficient power supplies, equipment that wasn't pulling as much power. We tied that in with our power management, and we got our annual cost down to about $40 a year. So what that's basically spelled out, and we've been doing this for about 2 years now, and it's been a phased approach because obviously not all of our systems were vPro. We didn't automatically have 12,000 systems. This has to be done through our life cycle. But what we've gained in 2 years changing through our life cycle is currently at $344,000. This has been our two-year gain in the process. It is a huge potential savings. And our estimate and our projections have been pretty accurate. And our projection in the third year, it'll be $728,000. So basically, this year, we're actually replacing quite a few systems. So that number is going to jump substantially. It will level out. And again, I'll kind of mirror what Link said about it being a soft cost. It is electricity that's tied back to your institution. But if you can go back to your institution and show them these numbers and help them understand what they're gaining, I think that's a huge tool that can be utilized to show value to the IT organization. Yes, sir. This is estimated. The first is the number, and then there's an estimate. I have the calculations that are set aside, and I can show you that. I didn't want to add them in because that's a whole lot of numbers. Correct. And then that's the additional. What would be added in, added on to that hard number. Right. Better design standards. Obviously, a lot of the standards like Energy Star and EPEAT and those kind of things. That's where we went. Plus, like I said, more efficient equipment. Okay. Are there any more questions on the advanced desktop side before I get going? Yes, ma'am. We have separate ROIs set up for those. It's not tied directly to the desktop, but that is a cost that we do account for. So when we have our set of key performance indicators that we present to our administration and to the board of trustees, those are things that are shown to them.
One of the items that's going to come out shortly, and it'll be available when we might even upload it to this, is Alchemy has been doing a business value assessment on our Altiris deployment. Power management is just a little piece. Automation is more, we've changed the process and the way we can do business with that. So if you want, you can get a card from me, and after they release it, I can send you a link to where it's at. But this is a third party. This is not us. It's not Symantec. It's a third party assessment. Yeah. We had that done on our Altiris centralization. We have another one coming out on VMware and what we're doing with VMware.
I didn't want it to be a vPro sales pitch, but there's definitely other tools that are embedded in that technology that are very useful. But just from this presentation point of view, it's just power management that we're talking about. All right, asset recovery. Obviously, this is one that I think everyone has to deal with in some regard. That we're producing a tremendous amount of technology on a yearly basis. And so let's kind of dive into it just a little bit. Obviously, I don't have to explain what e-waste is. I think we're all familiar with e-waste. And if you don't think this is a serious topic, do yourself a favor, go to Google tonight, and just Google e-waste, and see what pops up. There is incident after incident after incident of institutions improperly disposing of their equipment and it ending up in a landfill and ending up in another country, and data is then turned around and sold back to people on the black market. It's almost an epidemic. It truly is. So what we decided was we needed to address it in a proper manner. So we went and looked for a third party recycling company to assist us in this process. So some of the things that we did when we spoke with this group is we had a set of stipulations and criteria that they had to meet to be able to work with us. And a couple of those, some of those criteria were one, we wanted a competitive price. This equipment that we were handing off to them, it's not dead. It is still working. It just may not be working at the level that we choose to have for our institutions. So we wanted a competitive price. We wanted to ensure that the machines were white to the Department of Defense standards. So we wanted to make sure that when information left our institution, that it wasn't going to end up in the hands of somebody else, because they're obviously, from a day-to-day standpoint, sensitive information does end up on these drives. So we wanted to make sure that didn't happen. We also stipulated a zero landfill policy, and we're making them certify that none of our equipment that we sell to them, that they recover from us, is ever placed in the landfill. So they have to either sell it back or take the components and recycle them. But they cannot, by our contractual obligation, they cannot place it in the ground. So it can't end up in a landfill. And then the last stipulation is one that people often forget in this process. They also have to ensure that there will be no overseas dumping, that it will not end up overseas as well. Because what ends up happening with a lot of these recycling companies, they just turn around and sell it overseas and forget about it. And their thought is, if it leaves our hands, we didn't put it in the ground, so we didn't violate it. So we ensured in our contract that they wouldn't sell it overseas. That cuts down on your market quite a bit, unfortunately. So that value that you get back may not be as high. But again, why are we doing this? Are we doing it just for money, or are we doing it for social reasons? I argue we're doing it for both. And so in good conscience, I couldn't sign a contract that said that we're going to allow them to sell it overseas, because we know that happens over and over again. 60 Minutes have done stories on it. You know, like I said, Google e-waste tonight, and you'll see a lot of stories about it.
Okay. I'm going to ask Oscar a question for y'all. So how did you get around that process the state has put in place that requires you to send them all off to your auction? Is that the question?
Yeah,
y'all have that, don't you? Two years.
2 years. 2 years, extensive research by our general counsel and working with our board of trustees. It was not an easy process. I'm not going to pretend and say, oh, it's going to be simple. But we did work with our general counsel, and there is no specific, it's, at least in the state of Texas, there's nothing specifically that states that it has to be sent back to the institutions that we typically send our recovered assets to.
What we found out, straightforward, in the state of Texas, it reads that, yes, it should be turned over for surplus to K-12 through auction. And we do that, too.
Yeah.
If a high school is looking for equipment, we provide it to them. That's not an issue. But there's still plenty left over in that process.
Yeah.
The way the law reads in Texas, after it was finally interpreted and agreed to by the state of Texas, was that we have to, one, see if there is somebody in our local region that could use that equipment, that right. surplus equipment, without having to store it for a long duration of time. And then two, that we had to show that we could get value for the equipment. Well, what we proved through asset recovery is if you're turning over like we do on a 3- and 4-year life cycle, that there is value to that equipment that is a lot higher than what they were getting at auction.
Right.
So we did an initial few pushes here and there they allowed us to do so we could see what is the recovery dollars coming back to us. So we showed that we were getting more money than we were getting in auction, and then the social responsibility side. It is not easy. It takes your general counsel. It takes a lot of data collection. Mm-hmm. You need to take pictures of what you have sitting in storage. In our case, we even took pictures of it sitting there and said this much per square foot was wasted in that time that it sat in that storage area.
Right.
Because often your auction areas are, you're looking at 3 months to get it into auction, sometimes mm-hmm. longer, and you're sitting in wasting storage space.
Mm-hmm.
So it does take, one, convincing the institution it's worth the fight, and then, in our case, bringing a general counsel in to actually work against the state of Texas to come up with what is the right answer. And right. in the end, we were able to finally sign a contract and go this path. The other nice part is the time savings of your staff, because what we do now is we call them up, and I say I have 150 pieces to pick up at X location.
Mm-hmm.
They drive out there with their truck and their boxes. They pack it up. We don't palletize anything. They pack it up. They haul it off, and we don't have to do anything. My staff just sits there, and you know, you might have a part-timer make sure that they're getting the right equipment, and that's about it.
Yeah.
In the end, within a month, we get a check along with an indemnification statement.
Right.
So we know that what happened, what was the final disposal of that equipment. Either it's up for market for sale, or it was recycled. And then those documentation, of course, is kept with the institution.
Right.
So it is possible. I know it sounds impossible. I thought it was going to be impossible when we went down this path. It did take pretty much 2 years to get
there. Yeah, it was
the laws are pretty binding.
It was an uphill battle. It really was, but it is possible. All right, so what else are we doing? You know, so data centers, power management, these aren't new. These aren't new. I'm sure if you've been to these presentations before, you've heard about these kind of things. So what else are we doing? So I wanted to touch on it, and this is where I said earlier, this maybe can be a place where we can exchange ideas. You know, what are you guys doing? What are we doing? So let's talk a little about some of the classroom technology that we're doing. Okay, so that's pretty common too, right? Everyone kind of talks about printers. But let's talk about what we're doing. One, standardization. We're talking about it again. We standardize on print, our print equipment. Everything comes duplex. No more options. We used to give them an option. That doesn't happen anymore. Everything has a duplexer on it. Okay? By group policy, we've started that on our campus. We're pushing it to others. With group policies, you are forced to print two-sided. So, yeah, obviously, you have to go back and change it if you want to, but we're forcing two-sided printing. So we're forcing you to get a duplexer now, and now we're forcing you to print both sides. All right? One other thing that we're doing, and this one is a little bit more politically treacherous, so I don't necessarily be careful when you weigh down this path, is we're looking at our usage reports through Webjet Admin, and we are looking at potential consolidation of printers. Where can we pull printers back where they're no longer needed? Getting people to give up the printer on their desktop and walk across the room and get something off the printer. I know it's a crazy radical idea, but I think that in the end, yes, sir. Right. No, absolutely right. I'll tell you what though, as you, and there are other technologies that do that. You know, if you get, there are ways of ensuring that they have to select their print job when they get to the printer. But, the one thing I've noticed is we work in these, let's say an office suite, people stop printing miscellaneous stuff if they have to get up and go walk and get it. You know, it's easy to print when it's right here. You know, I'll print, it's right here, I don't have to do anything about it. But if I have to go get up and walk across the room, I don't know, maybe it's just, maybe they're a little lazy, I don't know. But if you have to print across the room, you know, some people think twice, like, oh, I don't really need that, you know. But yeah, absolutely, excess printing, it still occurs. Like I said, there are technologies that we're looking at where you can, like I said, select a print job so that you can print it, and it doesn't actually print out until you go up to the machine and print it. But, you know, like I said, printing is politically treacherous. It's amazing how important printing is in an institution and how just embedded into the culture it is. So printing, like I said, that's not new to. Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah. And actually, we're looking at managed print services on the faculty staff side soon. We've been evaluating it for, I'd say right now we're probably at 3 to 6 months of hard evaluations with the Webjet Admin tracking what's going on out there and how the utilization is. And we're getting to the point now pretty soon where we're going to start to launch out and evaluate putting in managed print services for all. So that each department then will be looking at, they'll receive their printer, it'll be maintained by us, but they will do a pay for print to reduce this even further. What we have seen the culture change is a lot more of them are finally getting to the point where, he's going to talk about it a little bit down the road, so I don't want to get too far ahead of him, but a lot more utilization of just on-screen evaluation, you know, not printing everything out.
Right.
Managed print services do offer you that advantage is if you can get it to happen and get the culture to understand and agree, it does help you to get to that point where you can finally say, all right, I don't really need to print everything, every email I get so I can read them on paper.
Right. Absolutely. Another thing, I forgot to mention this. If you guys, we're talking about idea exchange. I do have some gifts to give out later. So if you guys have some good ideas and some good things that we can talk about, I'll be handing those out here in a little while. Okay, so enough of printing. Tablets. Yeah, it's kind of odd, right? You don't think tablets in green. But this one's interesting. This actually stems from an encounter I had with a faculty member and me making fun of her. It just, what ended up happening was I was sitting in a meeting with this faculty member, and this English instructor, and she had a stack of papers that she needed to grade, and it was incredible. And I sat there and I looked at her and just, I was like, there's got to be a better way. Like, look how much paper you're wasting. I don't know what you call it wasting, but how much paper you're using to do this in this process. So through us kind of sitting through and brainstorming, we came up with this concept of using tablet PCs for grading. So what they're doing is their students are electronically sending their papers or whatever it is that needs grading to them. We've given tablets to we're actually piloting this. This is still kind of early in its infancy. But instructors are taking this and using the tablet to grade and annotate. You know, what is it that especially from an English instructor side, what are they looking for? They want to be able to grade. They want to be able to write notes on the paper. What is it that I need to tell this student? So now they can electronically annotate the papers. They print it off as a PDF. All right, and they electrically send the student back their assignment graded. And so that paper process is cut out. We've cut out the middleman. So they're not having to print all these papers and all this tremendous amount of... Yes? Sure. You know, yes, but the problem is that's been there forever, and they don't use it and don't utilize it. And so I think really what they were telling me is, I still want to write notes. I want them to see my handwriting. I want them to see me write something back to them. And so, yes, they could annotate, and that's built in, and it's been there forever, but they don't really utilize that. And it's kind of clunky, and it's difficult to use. So, the thought was put the pen in their hand. Let them write. So, obviously, tablets can also be used in electronic capture, and there's a lot of other uses for it. But that was kind of the unique, interesting use that we came up for this tablet.
And this is not an additional PC for them.
Right.
This is changing. We have a standard where faculty receive laptops. Well, instead of a laptop, they're receiving a tablet.
Right.
So it's not like we've added another piece of equipment they have to have. Some of the feedback has been straightforward. They like the fact that they could flip it around and, you know, be sitting down and just quick note like they could before.
Right.
Similar to what you're going to see if we could do it on the iPad next, you know, if you get to that level where they could just do it from anything.
Right. So that's one. That's another one that interesting path we went down. And like I said, it reduces printing, reduces paper usage. So occupancy sensors. We're putting occupancy sensors in our classrooms and tying it to our technology. So how many times, I mean, tell me if this is not your nightmare. You walk in Monday morning, because I've felt this. Walk in Monday morning, and I'm walking by a classroom, and I see a projector on, and I look in, and nobody's in there. And it's early in the morning, and so I know nobody's been in there at least for 2 days. And it's an awful feeling, because you know that you've lost 2 days worth of bulb life. That projector's been on, power's just been circling, just been going. So what we've done is we've started to put occupancy sensors in our classrooms that are tied to the lights in the classroom and to our equipment. So after a certain amount of time, if it doesn't sense someone in the room and activity, it'll shut off. We are using TetVox technology with their control system to tie that together. Like I said, we don't have to worry anymore. Once again, we bring in that automation piece. We don't have to worry about it. I don't have to send a tech around to check on projectors. You know, we have control systems to power these projectors off as well. So if we don't catch something, the occupancy sensor does. So again, simple. It's not obtrusive, and it's relatively easy to implement. Yes, sir.
Right. I'm saying in the middle of the day, not to say 9 in the morning.
Yeah. So a classroom isn't always utilized all every hour of the day, so it also saves in that regard. Because
I'm just talking about, you're saying, you come in Monday morning, you come to the classroom,
No, absolutely. And you know, we have police on campus that do make rounds and they do walk around, but I wouldn't trust them to turn the projector off. In fact, they might call me, you know, midnight on a Saturday to ask me how to turn it off. That's not out of the realm of possibility. But that's just another thing to think about. Occupancy sensors in those classrooms to shut stuff off. Simple, easy. Again, hands off. No one has to intervene. It just happens. Yes, sir.
Know exactly who you're talking about. Watching a movie. Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. Watching a movie instead of getting the classrooms ready for the next day, right?
Yeah.
That group. No, we do not. We don't.
No, not at the moment.
We could. I mean, with automation we have, we could. But we can tell if it's utilization. We can trend utilization. So if a supervisor came and said, you know, I think there's something strange going on here, we can actually go back into the logs and see when that classroom is utilized.
With our control system, when we set our schedules, we can set a trigger to say if this machine comes on, if this projector comes on at night, send me an email.
Yeah.
So there is easy ways of tracking it. Yes? Yes. Yes. They do graceful shutdowns. It's a graceful shutdown. It's not a power cut. So it triggers it. Yes.
Triggers the control system. And if you have a classroom control system, the technologies over the last two years, I'd say probably is the best. Almost every control system, even older control systems, can take an occupancy sensor and you can program your coding in necessary to shut down that room.
Right.
When this first came out, it was very limited. Very few vendors were supporting this type of technology. Now you're finding almost all your AV controllers have this capability. And the device is not expensive. You're talking about, I think, $65 for a sensor.
Yeah.
Depends on the size of the room you're working
with. Yeah. Key component, though, just so you know, and we'll take the questions. The one thing I want to mention about sensors, careful about placement. Careful about placement. If you put it near a door and it can sense movement on the outside, it may never go off. We have vendors that come in when they place them. They look at placement in the classroom to decide the best location for a classroom situation. Yes, it is close to the instructor's podium where they work from.
In front of the projector area, so it can sense the front. But the other problem is that there's an air duct kind of what sense wouldn't.
Right, it's not perfect. It can take some tuning. As you go on, you know, we start to find these issues and, you know, you get an angry call that a lights went out. But once you get past that initial phase, it's worked perfectly. Yes, sir.
By our standard, every one of ours are connected.
Every one of our projectors as we purchase is network ready and they're connected. Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so occupancy sensors. Thin clients. Now, people have done whole sessions on this. I am not going to talk about thin clients in that regard. What I am going to say is that we're engaging in thin client pilots, working with desktop virtualization, application virtualization, and we're trying to see where this is useful, where we could use this. What kinds of situations within the classroom or outside of the classroom that thin clients are going to be able to be utilized? The one big point that I wanted to make was that obviously from what we call a PC, a fat PC to a thin client, it's night and day power usage. I mean, obviously a thin client pulls very little power as opposed to your PC or your fat client, as you would call it. So that's just another thing to think about. There's a wealth of information out there. This is not a new concept. People have been doing it for years. And like I said, we're starting to work down that path and figuring out in our institution, where does thin clients fit in? Because we do feel like there is something or somewhere that it's going to fit in. Obviously there's huge, there's a lot of back end expense and, you know, it depends on your organization and what kind of infrastructure you have in place as to how you move forward with it. But once again, I'm not getting into the thin clients too much.
Thin clients are a tough one, especially when you do the ROI.
Yeah.
The reality is it's almost all soft costs.
Yeah.
It's better customer experience, improving the classroom delivery, getting them up quick. But if you do the end-to-end cost analysis, to justify an ROI is almost impossible.
Yeah.
You're not going to see ROI. Our calculations right now are pushing the 5 and 7 year range before you're going to start to see any possible ROI.
Right.
Now that's taking the soft costs out, because unless I can turn around and fire a bunch of techs,
which
we all know that's not going to
work. Which is not what we're trying to do.
I mean, if you can't do that, then you're going to make it easier. You're going to improve the service for the customer. There's a lot of great benefits to it. You're going to see some power savings here, but you're going to transfer those power savings into the data center side. All of these are a shift. The biggest one is you can improve service delivery through it. And, like I said, power consumption of a thin client device and the availability is phenomenal. Solid state versus anything we've got now, you can't complain.
Right. It leads to very spirited, to say the least, conversations, depending on what side of the fence you're looking at for thin clients and what you're thinking about. So those are some of the new technologies that we're going to talk, that I wanted to bring up. I'm going to do a quick overview, and then we'll get into questions and maybe some dialogue about what you guys are doing. So just from an overview perspective, about $428,000 a year in power savings. The enhancements are going to lead to a power savings of about $428,000 a year. Desktop power management, obviously, over the 3 year period is about $725,000, almost a quarter of a million. From the asset recovery side, old equipment and components need to stay out of the landfill. That's really what we're trying to gain. And also, there's a lot of new technology. There's a lot of different ways. Let's think about being creative. You know, the classroom is an expanding, changing thing, and so how can we, as thinking IT, as we put, you know, how, or as Gary Hamel put, you know, those 5,000 ideas that Google has a year, you know, how can we as an educational organization come up with ideas and different thoughts and different technologies? So, having said that, questions?
All right, tell you what, we've got to shut it down for the next presenter to come on. We can step outside in the hall.